evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington.
And I'm Michael Atit, also in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Friday, November 21st, 2014. A member of parliament from Eastern Equatoria State joins the rebels of the SPLM in opposition.
Right from when I became member of parliament representing Equatos, I have never taken anything from government to Equatos. There are no roads. Services are non-existent. The schools are in tatters.
And a top UN diplomat is in South Sudan to drum up support for humanitarian aid to people affected by the conflict.
One woman said, South Sudan is not what it was. And a boy of 13 was there taking care of his two brothers and three sisters, having lost both parents to the conflict.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus.
A former member of parliament representing Equatos County in Eastern Equatoria State has defected from the ruling SPLM party. Henry Bila Odwar claims the government in Juba is not delivering services to his constituency in Eastern Equatoria State. Odwar is calling on President Kiir to step down.
I've come to join the opposition to basically raise the point that Salva Kiir has, outlived his presidency, and it is time for him now to exit one way or another.
What made you to be unhappy with President Kiir? Because you're saying your reasons for leaving is because President Kiir has stayed in power for quite a long time. Why are you unhappy with him?
Not necessarily because he has stayed in power for a long time. I think his length of stay in the presidency basically has totally mismanaged South Sudan. The economy is in tatters. There is upheaval. Tribes are divided along those tribal lines.
I remember speaking with you when you walked out of the national parliament in protest of the national security bill. Is your defection having connection to that situation?
That is just one of the accumulations of the mismanagement of Salva Kiir. Basically, the national security bill is one of those draconian measures whereby now South Sudan is a police state. People basically have to look left and right before they even talk. And so there is totally apprehension, fear, and that is not a country that we have dreamed for.
You are a member of parliament elected by people from Equatos. If you
Correct.
Are abandoning your seat and opting to join SPLM in your opposition, what message are you sending to the people who elected you?
The message is that basically I cannot serve them. Right from when I became member of parliament representing Equatos, I have never taken anything from government to Equatos. There are no roads, services are non-existent, the schools are in tatters. Even now, Equatos County is probably worse off in that there is consumption of an illicit brew called goo. The government watches that is going on. You find that wives, husbands are addicted to this brew, and they give birth to children who are born drunk.
What is your next move now that you are in SPLM in opposition? What are you planning to do for the people of Equatos, given the problems that you are telling me?
Kiir must go. That is the only message. Kiir must go one way or another so that we can have a system that will be able to have people first in its agenda, whereby we have amassed, you know, through our oil wells, property of $20 billion. And all that has gone into Kiir's pockets, Kiir's cronies' pockets, Kiir's kith and kin pockets, and nothing for South Sudan. And we cannot continue to have that.
You sounded like you have a personal problem with President Kiir. Am I saying the wrong thing?
No, not at all. I think Kiir, as a person, is probably a nice person. But the way he has run this government, it is not only me who is dissatisfied with Salva Kiir. I think the whole of South Sudan is dissatisfied with Salva Kiir.
That's Henry Bila Odwar, a former member of parliament from Eastern Equatoria State. Oduor was among the lawmakers who walked out of national parliamentary session last month to protest the passing of South Sudan's controversial national security bill. He was speaking to me from Addis Ababa this past hour.
A top United Nations official visiting South Sudan says both sides in the country's ongoing conflict must respect the cessation of hostilities agreement. Kyung Wa Kang, the UN Assistant Secretary General for Humanitarian Affairs, spoke to reporters in Juba at the end of his 3 days visit to the country, and Charlton Doki was there and files us this report for VOA.
Kyung Wa Kang met with cabinet ministers, state authorities, and humanitarian workers in Juba and the Jonglei state capital, Bor. Kang also visited Lankien, a rebel-held area where there are an estimated 500,000 internally displaced persons. She describes her visit to the area as an eye-opening experience.
In Lankien yesterday, I met many men, women, and children who have been displaced, who had fled the conflict, and they had literally nothing. One woman said, "South Sudan is not what it was." And a boy of 13 was there taking care of his two brothers and three sisters, having lost both parents to the conflict.
Kang expressed fear that as the dry season begins and many areas become accessible by road, violence could further escalate.
Fighting has already started in Unity and Upper Nile states, and military mobilization reported in Jonglei state also. And if this continues, more people will suffer.
She called on leaders on both sides of the conflict to move quickly to end the violence, to ease the suffering of IDPs like those she met in Lankien.
I want to emphasize, first of all, the violence must stop. I appeal to all authorities to adhere to their ceasefire commitments, resolve their differences peacefully, facilitate efforts to scale up and expand the aid operation, and agree to a lasting peace that benefits the people.
Aid agencies say a majority of the people displaced from their homes during the year-long conflict are women and children. And according to British charity Save the Children, more than 400,000 children have been forced out of school due to the current conflict. Kang says leaders must do everything possible to ensure that South Sudanese children can return to school in a safe environment.
Second, children must be allowed to have a future. Therefore, I call upon all parties to the conflict to ensure that occupation of schools and health facilities by armed elements ends. This disrupts learning and services and leaves children exposed to abuse. Today's South Sudanese leadership has a responsibility to save this generation of children and ensure that they have access to basic services.
Kang said humanitarians will continue to assist the hundreds of thousands of South Sudanese affected by the conflict. She called on all parties to the conflict to respect human rights laws by protecting civilians and providing unhindered access to humanitarian workers trying to reach people in need. For VOA News, I am Charlton Doki in Juba.
From South Sudan, we now turn our attention to Sudan, where there are problems of a different sort. Worshippers at the Bahari Evangelical Presbyterian Church in Khartoum are peacefully protesting the demolition of church property by Sudanese authorities. They have been camping at the church compound since Wednesday. Church leaders say this is part of government's plan to restrict freedom of worship. Government officials say church built illegally can be and will be destroyed. VOA fellow Lucy Pony reports.
Yahya Abdulrahim Nalu, pastor at Evangelical Presbyterian Church, describes what happened.
3 days ago, police forces came to Khartoum Bahri Evangelical Church. That was on Monday, 17th November. They came and destroyed the pastor's house. That house was attached to the church, so they destroyed the house completely to the ground. The following day, they came also nearby the church. One of our houses also was destroyed by the same way.
Pastor Abdulrahim says the police came back a third time 2 days ago. They intended to destroy the pastor's office when they were met by a group of church youth who protested the demolition. He says it was fortunate that the police and the youth did not engage in any clashes. Since then, Pastor Abdulrahim says,
all the believers and church members that are gathering inside the church for praying, praising the Lord, and they are waiting to see what will happen. Maybe they will come again anytime to do the same thing with the church.
Juma Kunda, an ordained elder in the church and a professor at the University of Bahari, is praying at the church with many other worshippers. At the time we spoke to him earlier today, he said there were about 100 people gathered singing and praying and determined to stay as long as they have to protect the church. He says the church is one of the oldest and largest churches in Khartoum, built during colonial times. He says because of the size of the compound, many Christian occasions such as weddings and funerals have been held in the church compound. But he says that's changing as a handful of church leaders conspire with investors to sell off church property.
What they do is that they with some assistance from some of corrupted church leaders, not all of them, but some of them. They collaborate with the government and they issue a kind of contract for investment between the investor, who will be somebody in the market who doesn't care about religious freedom or rights or whatever, and the government will enforce him to take away the piece of land by force.
Kunda says after the separation of South Sudan, Christians have been feeling that their freedom of worship is being increasingly restricted. He says that feeling stems from the fact that commercial investors are collaborating with police to grab church land. He says many churches have been affected by what he calls an ongoing trend to reclaim church land by the government.
You may have heard about the closing down of a number of churches and confiscation of their property here and there. This has been going on. Not an incident cases, but it's like a very systematic policy. Do this. If they succeed, then they jump into another one. There's a number of cases where some local church here in Khartoum has been closed down. Some of them has been asked to close down. Some of their assets has been confiscated.
Sudan's Information Minister Ahmed Bilal says the government does not interfere with religious freedoms, and he asserts that only illegally built structures are demolished.
We have actually a problem. We have some of the churches which are built when the Southerners were here, and this is some of the buildings which are not legal and have no license. But I'm sure of one thing. If there is a church registered and legally built and these things, nobody will dare to enter or destroy.
Abdulrahim insists they have all the legal documents proving the church owns the land.
The church is built in the midst of the town, and we have legal papers, including certificate of research and everything. The land belongs to the church, and it was built since 1950s.
Abdulrahim says they have filed suit in Khartoum to block further destruction of the church and hope to succeed in court. For VOA News, I'm Lucy Pony.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, a report of members of the Communist Party in Sudan facing the death penalty. That story is coming up next.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
what makes a good police officer?
A good police officer is one that knows the laws of the country, but mostly because he's not attached to any political party and is doing the right thing.
A good police officer is someone who doesn't take bribe and who is not corrupt and who goes according to the laws of the country.
I think discipline is important. Discipline, because I think, you know, being a police officer is something very important, because it's a role where you have to keep yourself disciplined and keep other people well disciplined also. So discipline is important.
Someone who respects his job, who respects himself, who respects even the society. A majority of our police officers are corrupt. They are all, in short, it's like they are hungry, always wants money.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus. Still in Sudan, four members of the Sudanese Communist Party in southern Blue Nile are facing charges that could invoke death penalty, according to the party lawyer Bakri Jibril. Four activists were arrested last month for circulating a statement calling for a regime change in Sudan. They were released on Wednesday on bail. VOA fellow Nabil Biagio has details.
last month on the anniversary of the October 19th revolution leading to the overthrow of the first military dictatorship of Sudanese General Ibrahim Aboud in 1964, the Communist Party in Damazin issued a statement calling on the public to stand up and demand a regime change now. The leaflets were circulated in public places like local cinemas and the Communist Party headquarters in southern Blue Nile. The local authorities responded by arresting five leaders of the party in the following days. One of them was released shortly afterward, but the other four had criminal charges levied against them.
They were charged with Article 50, which deals with undermining the constitutional order, and Article 63, which deals with opposing established authority with violence, and Article 66, which deals with dissemination of false information.
That's Bakri Jibril, the defense lawyer hired by the Communist Party to represent the four. He says under those charges, his clients could get the death penalty. Jibril says after he made several requests to the Attorney General, the four men were finally released on bail on Wednesday.
They finally agreed to release them, but the charges still stand, as their case has been referred to court.
Jibril says the charges against the four men are politically motivated and says the government's case is weak.
We feel pretty confident about the legal position in this case. The Communist Party is legitimate and registered political party in Sudan. They have all the rights to carry out the party activities through the political forums and public statements on all issues concerning the country and its future.
Sudan's Information Minister Ahmed Bilal says he's not familiar with this particular case with the members of the Communist Party in Damazin. But he says Sudanese communists in general are known for engaging in subversive activities to remove the Islamic regime in Khartoum.
The Communist Party is one of the opposition which have no actual reasons. Historically, the problem with the Islamic groups, and they are actually doing some sort of work with the opposition, the rebels and this, not to join. And this is quite known for us.
Bilal says despite the bad blood between the Islamic ruling party and the Communist Party in Sudan, the government does not punish communists just for their political activities unless those activities amount to criminal offenses.
They have also their quarters, they have it open, they resume their work and their activity, nobody is interfering, this is for the first time, they have this, nothing from our side against them.
The Communist Party in Sudan refused to participate in the national dialogue President Omar al-Bashir called for earlier this year between the ruling National Congress Party and the opposition parties. The Communist Party has been calling for a regime change through a popular uprising like the ones that took place in 1964 and again in 1985 when President Jafar Nimeiri was removed from office. For VOA News, I'm Nabil Biagio in Washington.
There are also political rumbling in South Sudan, but not from a communist party. A youth leadership organization in Juba is claiming that South Sudan's current youth development policy renders young people voiceless and invisible. At the news conference in Juba today, the head of the South Sudan Democratic Forum's youth says the policy fails to clearly define youth or their representation in the national policy making. Philip Thornaleu has more for VOA from Juba.
Chairman James Darwai was the sole representative of the South Sudan Democratic Forum Youth League at today's news conference. He says the draft youth development policy presented to lawmakers on November 15th by the National Minister of Culture, Youth and Sport failed to highlight challenges facing the country's young people. For example, Darwai says youth must contend with high unemployment, few operating schools, and a lack of support from the government to develop talent. What is worse, he says, the policy does not even clearly specify who youth are.
It's not very clear in the policy. We actually need the consultation from the various youth of different organizations and youth from different political parties. The Democratic Forum suggests that the age limit of the youth within the policy should be 18 to 35. We need to be very clear.
Darwai says another missing component in the youth policy document being considered by lawmakers is the classification of youth into the educated and uneducated categories. Based on the United Nations definition of youth as anyone between the ages of 18 and 35, youth comprise more than 70% of South Sudan's population, according to a 2008 national census, the latest census available. Given that overwhelming majority, Darwai says the Minister of Youth, Sport and Culture should withdraw the policy from Parliament and conduct studies to clearly identify youth groupings.
Which youth are in the universities and which percent is a dropout in the school, youth affected by HIV/AIDS. The policy did not go in detail to explain the youth profile and how the youth actually are suffering in dignified silence in South Sudan.
Darwai says the policy calls on youth to be patriotic and loyal to their country. But he says it is not clear what measures one should take to pursue this nationalistic fright. He says it definitely does not encourage young people to add their voices to policy decision-making.
The presentation of the youth in all levels of government need to be very clear. For example, in Kenyan youth national policy, present youth of Kenyan 30%. So we want the parliament trying to analyze the youth policy to see if youth are presented in presented, because we actually read the youth policy and it doesn't talk about the presentation of the youth.
Instead of focusing solely on the draft South Sudan national youth policy, Darwai says a government pundit body should be organized to nurture and advance youth representations with clear goals for the future.
And if the policy is going to allocate the 20% of the national income of the country, the youth actually are going to go back to their school, knowing that there is the national financial support from our government. And we want our policy to talk about the implementation mechanism, which is very important.
Darwai says the proposed funding target could help talented but financially strapped young people pursue higher education. The South Sudan Youth Development Policy Document is being reviewed by the National Assembly's Specialized Committee on Youth, Sport and Culture before being returned to lawmakers for debate and final approval. Members of Parliament declined to comment on this story, saying the committee must first advise them on whether to pass the draft in its current form or not. For VOA News, I am Philip Tonaleo in Juba.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Here are some of today's news headlines with South Sudan in Focus editor Carol Van Dam.
Thanks, Michael. Sources in northern Nigeria say at least 45 people are dead after suspected Boko Haram militants attacked a village in Borno State. The reports say the militants stormed Azayakura village in the Mafa area on Wednesday and started attacking residents and destroying houses. The militants also carted away food, wares, and livestock. The caretaker chairman of Mafa Council has confirmed the attack. The World Health Organization has declared an end to the Ebola outbreak in the Democratic Republic of Congo. The outbreak, unrelated to the one affecting West Africa, was centered in Congo's northwestern Equator province and killed at least 49 people. The WHO released a statement today saying it has been 42 days, or twice the maximum incubation period, since a new case of Ebola has been detected in the DRC. And finally, U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry is returning to Paris for talks with European officials about the ongoing Iranian nuclear negotiations as a crucial deadline looms to reach a comprehensive deal. A State Department spokeswoman said today it is not known if Kerry will return to Vienna, where he met earlier with Iranian Foreign Minister Mohammad Javad Zarif today. And that's a look at some of today's top stories. I'm Carol Van Dam.
U.S. President Barack Obama has announced sweeping changes to U.S. immigration policy, a move that will affect the lives of millions of undocumented immigrants. But the president's plan is also heating up opposition in Congress. VOA's Caroline Presidi reports from the White House.
President Obama addressed the American public from the White House, saying the U.S. immigration system is broken.
It's been this way for decades.
And for decades, we haven't done much about it.
The president said his executive order will allow immigrants to come out of the shadows. It temporarily protects undocumented immigrants from deportation and gives them work permits as long as they have been in the U.S. more than 5 years, can pass a background check, and have children born here.
It does not apply to anyone who might come to America illegally in the future. It does not grant citizenship or the right to stay here permanently or offer the same benefits that citizens receive.
The priorities for deportation will now be terrorists, gang members, violent criminals, and recent arrivals. His plan expands the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals, known as DACA, by shielding people from deportation for 3 years, providing they arrived before 2010 and enrolled in school, regardless of their current age.
Are we a nation that educates the world's best and brightest in our universities only to send them home to create businesses in countries that compete against us? Or are we a nation that encourages them to stay and create jobs here?
With more than 11 million undocumented immigrants in this country, the president's orders will affect about 5 million.
President Obama.
Republicans are bitterly fighting the plan, saying the president should not act alone. Leaders Mitch McConnell in the Senate and John Boehner in the House.
The president has said before that he's not king and he's not an emperor, but he's sure acting like one.
But make no mistake, when the newly elected representatives of the people take their seats, they will act.
But congressional scholar Thomas Mann doesn't think there's much Republicans can do.
The only way they can undo these orders in a practical way is to win the next presidential election. If they win it, their president can withdraw those executive orders, and if the party wants to go with that position, they can.
President Obama has had his frustrations with legislators. Professor James Thurber has written about Congress and the presidency.
He obviously is thinking, well, they haven't done anything, the Republicans. They probably won't do anything. I'm going to get criticized for this anyway, but I want to do the right thing. It'll be part of my legacy.
The American public isn't so sure that executive orders are the way to fix immigration. A recent poll shows 48% against it, 38 in favor, and 14 unsure. The soonest any of these programs will go into effect is early next year. As one senior administration official put it, you don't just flip a switch and start the next day. At the White House, Carolyn Pursuti, VOA News.
That's our show for this Friday. We leave you with a song, Juba Wao Malakal by Unity State Group. Been listening to the Unity State Group with the song Juba Wao Malakal. I am Michael Atit in Washington.
And I'm John Tanza, also in Washington. You have a peaceful weekend and join us again next week for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.